and my parents with his usual loud familiarity. I stayed in the foyer, feeling like I needed a shower. When the doorbell sounded again, I opened it. A thin woman with her hair in a braid, wearing a flowing dress and leather clogs, was standing there. She looked very surprised to see me, as if she hadn't just pushed a button to summon someone.
"Hi," she stammered. "I'm, here to..."
"Michelle, right?" I asked. She nodded, blushing slightly. "I'm Sydney, Peyton's sister. Come on in." She did, bringing the sweet smell of some kind of essential oil with her.
"This is a lovely home," she told me as I led her down the hallway. I haven't been to this neighborhood before."
"We like it," I told her, because what do you even say to that? Thankfully, two more steps and we were in the kitchen.
"Mom, Michelle's here."
"Hello," my mother said. She was in her full-on gracious hostess mode, something I hadn't seen in a while. Before Peyton's problems, my parents had entertained a lot, both for my dad's work and within their own social circle. In the last year, though, the dinners and cocktails had gone from sporadic to non-existent. No one was in the mood for a party these days.
"Thank you so much for coming. It's an honor to have you."
"You have a lovely home," Michelle said again. There was a layer of pet hair, cat, dog, some other species, on the back of her dress.
"This is Sawyer Ambrose, our family attorney," my mom continued, "and my husband, Peyton, and our friend Ames Bentley. You met Sydney?"
Michelle nodded.
Yes, I did.
I was no expert, but it seemed that to be a professional advocate, you sort of had to be able to talk to people. Michelle, in contrast, seemed nervous whenever she was addressed during the wine and cheese my mother put out before dinner. Undeterred, my mother kept talking to her, catching my dad and Ames up on the various conversations they'd had in the last week about dealing with the warden, finding out information that wasn't being readily dispensed, and ways we could help Peyton from outside the prison.
"So," Sawyer said to me in the midst of all this, "I hear you're at Jackson High now. How are you liking it?"
"It's good," I said.
"My daughter Isley goes there,"
he told me, helping himself to a small cracker and a very big slice of Gouda.
"The teachers are good. The boys, though, trouble. Although I guess that's the case wherever you are. Am I right?"
Yeah, I said. My mother had gotten her social skills back, but mine were nowhere to be found, apparently. "I guess."
"She was dating this musician over the summer," he continued. "Real blowhard. Walked around with a tuner in his pocket, yakking on about irony and nuance."
That sounded awfully familiar. "What was his name?"
"Eric," he sighed. "She came to her senses before it went too far, at least. If it was up to me, wouldn't date until college. But it isn't up to me, of course."
"Sawyer," my mom interjected, putting a hand on his arm. "Michelle was just telling us about some really good opportunities for families to be involved at Lincoln."
"I'm in," said Ames right away. "Tell me more." "I don't know," Sawyer said, taking a sip of his wine. "You have to be careful. It might be better for Peyton for there to be a clear line between his life there and this one." "Well, of course, Peyton's well-being is our top priority," my dad added, and Ames nodded.
Michelle cleared her throat.
"It's been my experience that at Lincoln they are more progressive than some of the other institutions."
A pause. A long one. Then, right when I could tell my mom was about to jump in, she continued.
"Their warden is new and came from out of state. New York, I believe. He's got a reputation for being compassionate toward families."
"Well, I hope that is the case," my mom said. "But first I have to get him to return my phone calls."
You called the warden?
Sawyer asked, surprised.
Well,
my mom looked at my dad, then at Michelle.
Yes, I did.
After this latest infraction, we couldn't get any information, and I felt that it was important.
Julie, this is prison, not PTA.
I know that,
she said, an edge of irritation creeping into her voice. She must have heard it, too, as she paused, gathering herself before saying,
I just wanted to know what was going on.
Which is your right, Ames told her.
They can't just keep information from you.
Actually, they can, Sawyer said, wiping some crumbs from his mouth. Really, the best thing you can do for Peyton is let him serve his sentence with as little interference as possible. He needs to keep his head down and do what he's told. It's the only way he has a chance of any time being shaved off.
I'm not interfering, my mother said.
Of course you aren't.
God, Ames was such a suck-up.
It's important for families to feel involved, Michelle added.
When we all gave her our attention, she blushed.
It's better than helpless.
No offense, miss, but I've been working in the law 20 years. I've seen a lot of clients in this situation. There are things that make it harder and things that make it easier.
I think we should have dinner, my mom announced, getting to her feet. Just give me a minute. Sydney, a little help?
I followed her into the kitchen where she yanked open the stove a bit harder than necessary.
You okay? I asked.
Of course.
She took off her potholder, picking up a spatula.
I just think we have to explore all options in and out of the box. There's nothing wrong with that.
Sawyer, however, disagreed and continued to do so throughout dinner. He sparred with my mom, Ames, and a flustered Michelle, while my dad kept his head down, eating the biggest slice of lasagna I'd seen him consume in recent memory.
The basic fact,
Sawyer was saying at one point, long after I was done eating,
is that no matter what Peyton does, there's always the truth of his case. The facts. You saw the paper this week, I'm assuming?
Let's not, my dad began.
Totally biased piece,
Ames said. Biased, I said. Now everyone looked at me.
How can you...
It was all about that boy.
Yeah, but the way they wrote it.
He waved his hand as if somehow this completed the thought and sentence.
I'm just saying.
What was he saying? Never mind. I was sure I didn't want to hear it.
Of course we feel awful for that boy and his family, my mom said. But Peyton is our son, our responsibility. We've got a duty to look out for him.
That sounded familiar.
You can only do so much now, Julie,
Sawyer said.
You need to accept that.
Well, I think you're wrong, she said simply.
My dad and I exchanged a look.
Who wants dessert?
It was, in a word, excruciating. After dinner, Ames went out to smoke while my dad took Sawyer up to his office to show him some new computer he'd just gotten. My mom and Michelle camped at the kitchen table with their coffees.
Everyone that's part of this process has a different viewpoint, Michelle said to her, patting her arm.
She seemed more comfortable now, one-on-one.
That's why we need many voices, so we can have a conversation and keep it going.
My mom sighed, running a finger around the rim of her mug.
This is so hard. I've never felt so out of control.
It's normal. You're a mother. It's been your job to protect him.
You can't just quit that, even when someone tells you to.
By 9 p.m., both Sawyer and Michelle had left. Ames remained, sitting at the table having a conversation with my parents, although my mother was doing most of the talking. The irritation she'd barely managed to mask earlier had now blown up into a full-on rage with Sawyer as the target. You'd think with all the money we paid him, he'd be more supportive, she said at one point, taking a bite of the leftover cheesecake right out of the pan. I mean, defending someone shouldn't end the second the trial does.
Sawyer's done right by us, my dad said. He just sees things differently.
Well, then maybe it's time to look around for someone with a fresh view. I've heard great things about Bill Thomas.
My dad sighed, clearly not convinced. Ames said,
The main focus has to be Peyton. We can't lose sight of that.
Exactly, my mom said, pointing her fork at him. Thank God someone agrees with me.
Not for the first time, I wondered if this was the reason I was so obsessed with David Ibarra and his aftermath and story. Someone had to carry the guilt. If my parents couldn't, or wouldn't, it was left to me.
It's still early,
Ames said to me once my mom had gotten up to finish cleaning the kitchen and my dad disappeared upstairs.
Want to go out for some froyo? My treat.
Oh, that's nice of you, Ames. My mom, drying her hands on a dish towel, smiled at him. I know this was not exactly the way Sydney wanted to spend her evening. In fact, she knew what my preference had been. I said, Thanks, but I'm kind of tired.
Come on, he said. Are you really going to turn down a free hot fudge sundae? Not to mention great company?
I'll tell you what, my mom said, reaching for her purse. I'll treat you both. I'm really not in the mood, I told her. Thanks, though. My mom looked at me, raising an eyebrow. You okay? Fine. It's just a long week. She and Ames exchanged a knowing look.
It was,
she agreed, walking over and smoothing a hand over my hair. Not to mention a long night. Ames, take a rain check?
Of course, he said.
Sensing a chance to escape, I got to my feet. I think I'll just go upstairs and get ready for bed. My mom glanced at her watch. It was only 9:30. As I started out of the room, she said, Tomorrow is all yours, okay? Whatever you want to do. I had a feeling that going to Layla's was not what she had in mind as she said this. But all I wanted was to get out of this house, be somewhere the ghost of my brother, not even dead, didn't haunt every corner. Up in my room, I got into my pajamas, then brushed my teeth. I kept checking to see if Ames had left yet, wondering what else he could possibly have to say to my mother. But as a half hour passed, and then another, his car remained. Finally, I crept halfway down the stairs to listen. She's doing fine, he was saying. It's a big adjustment. Imagine what it's like to be in high school and dealing with this. I just wish she'd stayed at Perkins. I feel like I'm losing touch with her, just because there's so much I don't know about her daily life.
That sounds like a common feeling for you.
I rolled my eyes. It is. A pause. All I ever wanted was for them to be happy.
Happy is a lot to ask for all the time.
I don't want all the time, she replied. Not anymore. I'd just take a little and be grateful for it. She sounded so sad, so tired. At times like this, it was hard to even remember the way my mom had once been, bubbling with energy and projects. Like the center of the wheel that was our family. She'd always held all our separate spokes together and kept them rolling. Now, though, more often than not, we were wobbling, lucky to be moving at all. Before I turned out my light, I picked up my phone, glancing at the last text Layla had sent. I wished there was a way to catch her up all at once, so that she'd know what I was feeling right that moment. And maybe understand. I flipped over to the article from the paper still bookmarked and copied the link, then pasted it into a fresh message. Then, before I could overthink it, I hit send.
No explanation, no comment. Just the story as it was. I stayed awake for a while, wondering what she'd write back. When I woke up in the morning, I didn't know whether to be happy or sad that there was no reply from her at all. Chapter 11. I was right. Despite her promises the night before, my mom was not exactly thrilled to discover that the one thing I wanted to do on Saturday was spend the night with Layla. "Oh, honey," she'd said that morning when I brought it up. It was only 9 a.m., but I'd already made her sound weary. "I don't think so. It's already been a long week, and I don't even know this girl." "She spent the night here already, though," I pointed out, hoping to appeal to her sense of manners and social contracts. "Twice, actually." "That was different," she replied, pouring herself more coffee. "You were here, and Ames was with you." "Which was so much safer," I thought. But of course, she thought it was. I wondered if he actually looked different to her physically. His very features starkly different, since we saw him in such opposite ways. "I stayed home last night like you asked me to. You said today was mine to do what I chose." "I meant something like going to the movies or out to lunch, not disappearing for a full night to a strange place." "Mom, it's across town, not Neverland." She made a face at me, then looked at my dad, who was bent over his customary huge plate of bacon and eggs, reading the sports page. "Peyton? Could you weigh in here?"
"Sure." He sat back, wiping his hands on a napkin. "On what?"
"Sydney wants to spend the night at her friend Layla's house tonight." My dad looked at me, then back at her, clearly trying to guess what the issue was. I marveled, as always, at his ability to be literally inside a conversation and yet miss it altogether. Slowly he said,
"And the problem is..."
"That we don't know her? Or her family?"
"Can we meet them?" he asked.
My mom looked at me, as if this prospect would dampen my drive to do this. "Sure," I said. "Her parents own a pizza place over by my school. I'm sure they're open for lunch. Her dad's usually there." It was a tribute to how desperate I was that I was willing to bring my mom to Seaside. But this was not just me getting what I wanted. What I'd overheard her say to Ames the night before was still on my mind. There was nothing she could really do when it came to knowing more about Peyton's world. But maybe I could give her a wider glimpse into mine. 3 hours later, I was in the passenger seat of her hybrid SUV, directing her into a parking space. My dad had a racquetball game, so it was just us, and I was strangely nervous, as if this was some sort of test I needed to pass. She cut the engine, then flipped down her visor, checking her lipstick. "Hungry?" she asked me.
"Totally," I replied.
"The pizza is great here." Inside, I saw Mac first, in a Seaside t-shirt and jeans, behind the counter spreading sauce onto an uncooked pie. For the first time, the thin silver chain he wore was fully visible, and I saw that it had a charm on it, something circular that looked like a coin, although it was hard to tell from a distance.
"Hey," he said, "Layla said you might be in."
"Is she around?"
"On her way. 5 minutes or so."
I looked at my mom, who was silently taking in the dark decor, plastic tables, and black and white pictures lining the walls. "Mom, this is Mac," I told her, "Layla's brother."
"Nice to meet you," he said,
wiping a hand on a nearby towel and extending it. My mom reached over the counter and they shook.
"Can I get you guys something?"
My mom squinted at the menu. "How are the salads?"
"Not as good as the pizza," he replied.
At this, she smiled.
"They never are they?"
"Nope."
I shot him a grateful look, wondering how much Layla had told him. Is your dad at Seaside?
I'd texted her earlier. Mom wants a face to the overnight.
Noon, she'd replied. Don't worry, we clean up well.
Texting was always weird when it came to tone, and seeing this, I wondered if I'd offended her. When she walked through the back door 10 minutes later, though, I knew right off I shouldn't have worried.
Hey, she said.
She was in a wingy patterned skirt and a white t-shirt, her hair pulled back in a ponytail, flip-flops on her feet. In her hand glistening was a cotton candy yum-yum. Her dad was behind her carrying a couple of shopping bags. She walked up to my mom and stuck out her hand.
Finally, we meet. I'm Layla.
Well, hello, my mom said, shaking her hand. I've heard a lot about you.
Hopefully all good,
Layla looked at me,
although I bet it was mostly food-related.
Layla loves French fries, I explained to my mom, and lollipops.
All the components of a healthy diet,
Layla said cheerfully. As she turned looking at her dad, I could see my mom sizing her up and wondered how she saw her. No fancy labels on her clothes, a worn purse not from this season or probably even the last. That lollipop.
Hey, Dad, come here a second.
Mr. Chatham emerged from behind the counter, tying an apron around his waist.
You must be Sydney's mother, he said to my mom. Mac Chatham.
Julie Stanford. You and your son have the same name? My mom said, shaking his hand.
Family tradition, he explained. My dad was Macaulay as well.
It's the same with my husband, his father, and Sydney's brother. Three Peytons. When they're all in the same room, confusion reigns.
I can usually tell which one my wife is yelling at by her tone, he told her. I get a bit more leeway due to the marriage factor, but not much.
You have other children?
One, Rosie. She's 2 years older than this one, he said, cocking his thumb at Mac.
She does competitive ice skating, I added. She toured with the Mariposa show.
Really? My mother said. How impressive. You must be so proud.
Until the drug bust, Layla said. Since then, not so much. Mr. Chatham just looked at her, while my mom, clearly surprised, struggled to get her expression back under control. I closed my eyes.
Anyway, Layla continued, did you guys get everything you need? Drinks, garlic knots?
We're fine, I told her. I can't wait for Mom to try your pizza.
I'll make sure you get an extra big piece, Mr. Chatham said, turning back to the counter. Nice to meet you, Julie.
And you as well, she replied.
She sat back down as Layla followed him back behind the counter, turning to look at me. When they were out of earshot, she said in a low voice,
Drugs?
Rosie had an injury that led to some legal issues with prescriptions, I explained, watching her face carefully. Before Peyton's troubles, the judgment would have been automatic, almost a reflex. Now, however, she didn't have that option unless she wanted to risk looking like a hypocrite. It was clever of Layla, I realized, to expose our common denominator right off the bat, letting her know that for all the differences, we did share something.
She's getting back into skating now. I watched her practice the other day.
You did? She said. I nodded. She was pretty amazing. Mac appeared beside us carrying two plates of pizza.
One pepperoni, one Roma, he said, putting them down. Anything else?
Not right now, I don't think, I told him. Thanks.
He nodded, then returned to the register, where Layla was now leaning against the counter, yum-yum in her mouth, watching us. Her dad said something and she nodded, then replied, tucking a piece of hair behind her ear.
Wow, my mom said, dabbing at her mouth with a napkin. That is good.
Told you, I said. She glanced up at the picture beside us, which was of a boardwalk lined with games of chance, the sea visible in the distance.
I'm curious about the name. Not much coast around here.
I think it came from up north,
from another place her granddad owned, I said. She nodded, then stopped chewing, cocking her head to one side.
Is that a banjo I hear?
Bluegrass, I said. It's all that's on the jukebox. For a moment we ate in silence. The phone rang behind the counter. Mac took an order. Mr. Chatham disappeared into the office. Meanwhile, the sun slanted in the front window, making little bits of dust on the table beside us dance.
How did you meet Layla again?
My mom finally asked me. I swallowed the bite in my mouth.
Here.
I came in for a slice after school, and we just started talking. She looked back at Mac, who was pulling a pie out of the oven.
You said her mother was ill.
She has MS. I think they trade off taking care of her.
How awful.
She wiped her mouth.
And where do they live?
About 2 blocks from here. I could sense I was close to getting what I wanted, which was also near enough to worry about it slipping away. So I kept quiet and waited for her to speak again. Instead, the next sound that came was her phone. She pulled it out of her bag. Upon seeing the screen, her eyes widened, and she quickly scrambled to hit the talk button.
Hello?
Distantly, I could hear the sound of an automated voice.
Yes.
Her voice was clear and loud enough that Layla and Mac both looked over at us.
I'll accept the charges.
It was Peyton. I could tell by her face, the way her eyes filled with tears when after a beat he began to speak. I couldn't hear what he was saying, but I didn't have to. I'd always had a sense when it came to my brother. And anyway, his voice had more presence than most people did face to face.
Oh, honey,
she said, putting her other hand to her face.
Hello, hello. How are you? I've been so worried.
As he replied, she got to her feet and headed for the door. The phone clamped to her ear. Once outside, she began pacing on the sidewalk, her face all attention, listening hard.
Looks like an important call.
I glanced up to see Layla standing beside me.
My brother, I said.
It's the first time he's had phone access in a while. She was still watching my mom moving back and forth in front of the window.
She sure looks happy.
Yeah, she does. Neither of us spoke for a second. Then, wordlessly, she put a root beer yum-yum beside my plate.
Compensation?
A gesture of sympathy? It could have been both these things, or neither of them. It really didn't matter. I was grateful for it. When I got to Layla's later that afternoon, I was surprised to see several cars parked in the driveway and along the curb. Clearly, I was not the only one who had been invited over. No matter, though. I was just glad to be there, even if it did take my brother to make it happen. After hanging up with him, my mom was so over the moon, I probably could have gotten anything I asked for. This, though, was all I wanted. I parked behind a minivan that I recognized as belonging to Ford, the bass player in Eric and Mac's band, the name of which was still in flux. Before Hey Dude, they'd been known as Hot Dog Water. Both names, Eric felt, did not do their art justice. This had been the subject of another extended discussion at lunch on Friday, during which Layla said he should pick a name and stick with it, for recognition if nothing else. He, however, maintained that a band's identity was not something to be decided lightly. Whatever they became next was important. Unlike, say, Hot Dog Water. From there, the conversation had gone about how they all did, segueing from a somewhat civilized discussion to Eric performing a loud monologue that no one else could interrupt. I often left lunch feeling exhausted, and that day I'd almost fallen asleep in my ecology class afterward. The band might have been nameless, but this didn't prevent them from practicing, if the noise I heard as I walked up to the house was any indication. The music was coming from around the side of the house, so I followed it. Coming upon an outbuilding that sat between a truck up on blocks and a large sedan with a sunken-in roof. Smaller than a garage, but bigger than a shed. It had two wooden doors that were open, revealing Mac at his drum set, Eric behind a microphone, and Ford, who was fiddling with an amplifier. In front of them was Layla in a lawn chair. She was wearing sunglasses. "Verdict?" she was saying as I came up behind her. "Too loud. Not good." Eric just looked at her.
"Don't feel the need to candy coat, Chatham."
"Don't worry, I won't."
"We're supposed to be loud, though,"
Ford said, unplugging something, then plugging it back in.
"That's part of the whole ethos, right? That this music was, in its original form, so highly controlled and conducted, even computerized. Making it raw and rough turns it on its head."
Mac, drumsticks in hand, raised his eyebrows.
"Dude," he said, "you've been hanging out with Eric way too much."
"On the contrary, I think someone is finally talking sense around here," Eric said. "Now we just need to get our drummer on board with the message, and we'll be all set."
"Forget your message," Layla told him. "Concentrate on playing well."
"Nobody asked you," he said. "Don't you have special ketchup to formulate or something?"
"Nope." She sat back, crossing one leg over the other. "Right now, I have all the time in the world."
"Lucky us," Eric grumbled, turning back to the other guys. "Okay, let's try Prom Queen again from the top."
Matt counted to four, and then they began playing again, sounding a bit disjointed at first, before gelling somewhat by the end of the first verse. Despite Layla's ongoing commentary, I saw her tapping her foot as I came up beside her. "Front row seat, huh?"
"Hi!"
She looked genuinely happy to see me. "Well, it's hardly the real Logan Oxford, but at least we don't have to go far. Here, let me get you a chair."
"Oh," I said. "You don't..."
But she was already going into the shed, squeezing past Ford in his base to retrieve a battered pink lawn chair, patterned with palm trees. As she plunked it down in front of me, a couple of dead spiders fell off it. She ignored this, wiping it clean with her hands before presenting it to me. "Best seat in the house. Or this house." I sat. The band was still playing, although Eric had stopped singing and turned around, his back now to us. I said, "So this is where they practice?"
"Sometimes," she replied, plopping back into her own seat. "There's also Ford's basement, but there's always laundry going down there, and Eric claims the smell of fabric softener gives him a headache."
Rockstar problems.
"Eric problems," she sighed.
"They're like first world, but even more privileged." I looked at the man in question, who had now stopped playing altogether and was tuning his guitar, a frustrated look on his face. As Mac and Ford moved alone into the chorus, I realized they actually sounded better without him. Maybe this was why I said, "You're tough on him."
"Eric?"
I nodded.
"Yeah, I guess. But it's from a good place, I swear. Before he met Mac and started coming around, he was such a freaking jerk. Just a total know-it-all blowhard. But the thing was, it wasn't really his fault."
"No?"
She shook her head. "His parents, they tried to have kids for, like, ever. All these fertility problems, miscarriages. They'd basically been told there was no way it was ever going to happen for them. So when his mom got pregnant without even trying, it was like a miracle. And when Eric arrived, they treated him accordingly."
"Like a miracle?"
"Like God's gift, which was what they thought he was."
She shifted in her seat. "The problem was when it became how he saw himself, and there was no one there to tell him otherwise. Then he met Mac."
"And Mac did?"
"In his way,"
she replied. That's the thing about my brother. He's subtle, you know, and a good guy. A guy you want to like you.
I cleared my throat, concerned I might be blushing.
So he just told Eric that he didn't have to try so hard, win every discussion, talk louder than everyone else, that kind of thing. And Eric, to his credit, listened. Now he's not so bad, although he has his lapses. And when he does, I feel it's my duty to speak up. We all do.
For the common good, I said.
Well, it takes a village, she replied. Or a city, really, in his case.
A big one.
Many citizens.
I laughed as there was a blast of feedback, followed by Eric shouting something. Layla winced.
Okay, I need a break. Let's go get something to eat.
She got up and I followed her across the muddy backyard to the house, where a mossy line of paving stones led up to the back door. It creaked when she pulled it open, a sound that appeared to summon the dogs which swarmed our ankles, barking wildly as we went inside.
"Sydney's here!"
she called out as the door swung shut behind us. It took a second to adjust from the brightness outside, but then, yet again, it was all in place. The couch, the huge TV, the two cluttered tables flanking the recliner in which Mrs. Chatham was seated, wearing a sweatshirt that said Miami and scrub pants. As I watched, the dogs, having lost interest in us, jumped up and burrowed under the blanket spread across her lap.
"Welcome," she said to me. "I hear you're spending the night."
"Yeah," I replied. "Thanks for having me."
"Don't thank us yet," Layla said.
"You may change your mind once the music starts."
"The music?" I repeated. I looked out the window.
"They're already playing, though."
"Not that music. My dad's. As it turns out, he also invited a bunch of people over tonight. Not that anyone told me."
"I bet Sydney will love it,"
her mother said.
"It's bluegrass," Layla told me. "Nothing but bluegrass. All night long. If you don't like mandolin, you're in trouble."
"You have a door on your room. Feel free to use it," Mrs. Chatham said in a tone that, while cheerful, made it clear was the end of the discussion.
"Now go make some popcorn, would you, honey? I want to talk to Sydney a second."
Layla glanced at me, then turned, walking into the kitchen. For a minute I felt like I might be in trouble, although I couldn't imagine what for. When I looked at Mrs. Chatham, though, she was smiling at me. I sat down in a nearby chair just as Layla turned on the microwave.
"So," she said as one of the dogs shifted position on her lap, "I saw the article in the paper."
Over the last few months, I'd realized that there was really no ideal way for anyone to talk to me about Peyton. If they avoided the subject, but it was clearly on their minds, things felt awkward. Addressing it head-on, however, was often worse, like a train coming toward me I was helpless to stop. Really, nothing felt right, yet this gentle inquiry was the closest I'd gotten. An acknowledgement and sympathy, while still respecting the facts. It took me by such surprise, I couldn't speak at first. So I was glad when she continued.
"That must have been so hard for you and your family," she said. "I can't even imagine."
"It is," I finally managed. "Hard, I mean. Mostly for my mom. I hate what it's done to her."
"She's suffering."
It was a statement, not a question.
"Yeah."
I looked down at my hands.
"But so is that boy, David Ibarra. I mean, he really is." "Of course."
Again, no judgment. Just a prod to keep going. So I did. "I think,"
I began, but then suddenly it was too big to say or even exist outside of my own head. It was one thing to let these thoughts haunt the dark spaces of my mind, but another entirely to put them into the light, making them real. She was looking at me so intently, though, and this place was so new, with no semblance of the world before, except for the fact that I was in it. I think my parents see Peyton as the victim in some ways. And I hate that. It makes me sick. It's just so... it's wrong.
You feel guilty.
Yes, I said. The vehemence of this one word surprising me. Like simply concurring made my soul rush out, gone. I do. So much. Every single day. Oh, honey. She reached out, putting her hand over mine. In the next room, the popcorn was popping, producing the buttery smell I associated with movies and after school, all those lonely afternoons.
Why do you feel like you have to shoulder your brother's responsibility?
Because someone has to, I said. I looked into her eyes, green flecked with brown, just like Layla's. That's why. Instead of replying, she squeezed my hand. I knew I could pull away and it would still be all right. But when Layla came in a few minutes later with the popcorn, that was how she found us. I'd let so much go, finally. It made sense, I suppose, that right then, I would maybe just want to hold on.
Chapter 12.
How much farther? You always ask that. And I always mean it.
A pause. Then,
seriously, how much?
Up ahead, Mac turned around, shining the flashlight back at Layla.
If you're angling for a ride, you should just ask.
She smiled.
I wouldn't want to impose.
In response, Irv, who was walking alongside Mac, dropped back so we could catch up with him.
Hop on,
he said, crouching down, and Layla climbed onto his immense shoulders, piggyback style. Then we continued on into the darkness. I'd felt so shaken after my talk with Mrs. Chatham that I was grateful, actually, for the chaos that followed. After we had polished off the popcorn and watched one episode of Big Los Angeles, one catfight, two breakdowns, too many gorgeous outfits to count, Mac, Eric, and Ford had come inside to raid the fridge. Then Rosie showed up with a couple of her Mariposa friends, who were in town doing a week of performances at the Lakeview Center. The house already felt packed, even before Mr. Chatham came home, and his friends arrived, instruments in hand. After the constant quiet of my own house since Peyton had been gone, I expected the contrast to be overwhelming. Instead, I found that I liked the constant hum and noise. The fullness of many people and much energy in a small space. I could hang back and just watch, yet still feel involved. It was nice. Dinner was a huge amount of pizza, salads, and garlic knots from Seaside, which we ate in the outbuilding while Layla's parents and their friends filled the living room and kitchen. It was just starting to get dark when I heard the first strains of music coming from the house through the open back door. It sounded like the jukebox at Seaside, but more real, alive. I'd assumed we'd head inside for the music, but everyone else had other plans. After checking in with Mrs. Chatham to see if she needed anything, Mac returned with a duffel bag, which he took into the garage. A moment later, with the bag visibly fuller, he returned and hoisted it over his shoulder. Layla pulled a flashlight from a nearby cabinet, while Irv, who had arrived post-popcorn and pre-dinner, grabbed the backpack he'd brought with him. Eric packed up his guitar
and then they all headed outside in silent consensus. I followed, the only one who had no idea where we were going. As it turned out, it was into the woods. They all started toward it, as if entering a huge swath of dark forest at night made total sense. I guess to them, it did.
"Hey," Layla said, looking over at me. "It's okay. Come on."
When Peyton and I went into the trees behind our house, it took a few minutes to leave our yard and the neighborhood behind. Here, though, it was different. We'd no sooner stepped in than we were swallowed up, lights from the Chatham's house dimming, then disappearing altogether. I was grateful for Mac's white shirt, which seemed to almost glow as he led us deeper and deeper into the trees. We'd been walking almost 20 minutes when Layla first complained. Once she was on Irv's back, we easily doubled that time.
"I always forget how freaking long this takes," Eric complained, his guitar case bumping against his leg.
"Do you want Irv to carry you too?" Layla asked him.
I was somewhat out of breath, both from Mac's fast pace and the distance. Irv, however, hardly seemed winded, even with an additional 100+ pounds on his back. We kept walking. And then, right when I was sure someone, maybe even me, was about to voice more displeasure, I saw a clearing ahead. The trees thinned, then disappeared altogether, leaving us facing a large metal structure, plopped down in the middle of all that forest like God himself had dropped it there.
"Finally," Layla said, as if she had walked the whole way.
Irv slid her off his back.
"Beer me, someone."
Mac had already put down the bag he'd been carrying and unzipped it. As I watched, he tossed a can to her, which she caught with one hand, then passed one to Eric as he set his guitar down. Then he held one up to me. I looked at Irv as he was closer and, far as I was concerned, had seniority. But he shook his head.
"Don't drink," he explained. "No point."
"He can't get drunk," Layla told me. "Too big."
"That's why we call him HW, Mac said. "Heavyweight. As opposed to..." "Don't say it,"
Eric warned him, popping the tab on his beer.
"LW, Layla finished.
Another one of Eric's many nicknames.
"I am not a lightweight."
As if to prove it, Eric sucked down a bunch of his beer, then belched loudly. Then he looked at me.
"Want one?"
I was not much of a drinker, especially after Jen's piña colada disaster. But I wasn't driving, and we were in the moonlight. So I nodded. Mac went to throw one to me, but Eric took it first, then opened it before bringing it over.
"Thanks," I said.
It was cold in my hand.
"My pleasure."
He held out his can.
"To you."
Layla rolled her eyes, but withheld comment, letting her civic duty slide as she walked over to sit down on the edge of the structure I'd seen earlier. I'd thought it was a vehicle, maybe an old truck, parked off what I now could see was a logging road that twisted into the trees. Looking closer, I saw it was something else entirely. An old metal carousel, so corroded it almost blended into the dark. I stood there a minute, taking it in. If I'd had more than one sip of beer, I would have assumed I was imagining it.
"Cool, right?"
Layla said. She was perched at the base of one of the horses. Mac found it during his weight loss wanderings.
"They're called runs," Mac said.
"Whatever. The point is, someone left this here at some point. But why? And how? Did they bring it on a truck and plan to come back for it? Or build it here? I walked around the front part of the carousel, taking in several more horses and a rickety-looking chariot with grass growing up through a hole in the seat. It's amazing, I said. You really don't know who it belongs to? There aren't any houses for miles. What about this road? I asked, nodding toward it. If you follow it, it just ends long before the woods does. Layla took a sip of her beer, swinging her legs. It's so creepy. But it wasn't scary to me. Instead, it felt magical. Like the kind of thing Peyton and I could only have dreamed of discovering during our own explorations. The chance of finding something like this was what brought you into a woods in the first place. Thinking this, I looked over at Mac. I was surprised to find he was watching me over the rim of the can as he drank, and I returned his gaze, remembering that $5 bill tucked safely away in my wallet, unspent.
You should check out the other side, Eric said, appearing suddenly beside me. I heard a pop.
He was moving on to his next beer.
That's where the ring is. Come on, I'll show you.
I followed him around, past the chariot to where a large horse was rearing up, head thrown back, mouth open. Whoever had made this had taken their time.
You kind of have to get in the right place to see it, Eric said, climbing up beside the horse.
He held out his free hand.
I'll pull you up.
I looked back at Layla, who I could now barely make out in the dark. Mac I'd lost sight of entirely. Only Irv remained fully visible, but it wasn't like he was one to blend in. I gave Eric my hand, feeling his fingers tighten around mine as he lifted me up next to him. Beneath our feet, the carousel creaked.
Okay,
he said, putting his hands on my shoulders and gesturing for me to look up at the roof of the carousel above us.
Now, see where the pole meets the metal up there?
I nodded.
Yeah?
Then look right to the left of it, he pointed.
It's sort of small, but it's there.
It took a minute, but then I made it out. A simple ring hanging above us, close enough that if you were on the horse as it rose to its highest point, you could grab it.
I'm surprised no one's pulled it down, I said. Oh, believe me, we've tried.
He took another drink.
It's stuck in there good. Whoever made this didn't want anyone to take it.
I could see how it would be tempting. Who doesn't try for the prize if it's that close?
How do you get up there, though?
When it's moving. I turned around only to realize we were really close, practically face to face. Eric, for his part, did not seem startled by this, and I suddenly had the feeling, if not the certainty, that he had done this, all of this, before.
It moves?
Only when someone's pushing it, I heard Mac say.
Somehow he'd approached without us hearing him, and was now standing just in front of the horse. In the moonlight, I noticed again the coin hanging from the chain around his neck. Instinctively, I stepped out from beneath Eric's hands, which were still on my shoulders.
How is that even possible? Isn't it, like, crazy heavy?
Not as long as you don't load it up with too many people, he said. We've gotten it going at a decent clip before, especially if Irv's here.
Can't get drunk, have to push the merry-go-round.
Irv's baritone came from the darkness.
Don't know why I even hang out with you guys.
Because you love us! Layla, who had also now walked over, called out to him. She looked up at Eric. Your phone's beeping, just FYI.
Oh, that might be about this gig next weekend. I should take it.
Eric patted my shoulder.
Back in a sec.
Layla watched as he went around to the other side. Then, without comment, she followed, leaving me and Mac alone. We were quiet for a moment. I could hear Layla talking to Irv and another beer popping. Finally, I said, I wish I'd found something like this when I used to walk in the woods. He looked up at it.
Yeah?
I nodded. The coolest thing I ever found was an arrowhead. Oh, and a bat skull.
Sounds like you were out there a lot.
My brother and I were, when we were kids. I looked up at the ring again. In the right light with the moon hitting a rust hole just near it, you could see it perfectly. I took a drink. He was the explorer, really. I just tagged along. I wanted to do everything he did. Another silence. I heard Layla laugh. Then Mac said,
I heard about what happened to your brother. I'm sorry.
It didn't happen to him, I said.
He did something. There's a difference.
As soon as I said this, I realized how angry it sounded. He said,
I didn't...
No, you're fine, I said quickly. It's just... a tender spot, I guess. Immediately, I was horrified. What possessed me to use the word tender in any context around a cute guy I barely knew? I had no idea. I took a big gulp of my beer, then another.
Well, he said after a moment, everyone has one.
He was looking up at the trees as he said this, his face brightened by the moonlight. Maybe it was the beer or the fact I'd already said the wrong thing twice. But I figured I had little left to lose. So I said, even you, huh? Now he did look at me.
I was the fat, pimply kid up until pretty recently. You don't just forget.
I shook my head. I still can't believe that.
It's documented.
Another sip.
Despite my best efforts to destroy any and all evidence.
Distantly, I heard Layla laugh. I would think you'd want the proof. That maybe it might, you know, make you proud, seeing where you came from.
I'd be prouder if I'd never let myself get to that point, he said.
Can't change the past. He reached up, sliding his finger under the chain around his neck.
Doesn't mean you should dwell on it.
Eric wasn't the only lightweight. The beer was hitting me now. I finished it off, then put it down beside me.
What's the story with that coin?
Coin?
I nodded at it, and he looked down.
Oh, it's actually a pendant of a saint. My mom gave them to all of us when we were kids.
A saint?
Yep.
He pulled it out, angling it to the moonlight.
Bathilde. Patron saint of children. I guess she figured we'd need all the help we could get.
I moved closer, barely able to make out a figure and some tiny words on the pendant. It's nice.
Yeah, but it's also a reminder.
Of what?
When I was at my heaviest, this thing choked me. I mean, seriously, it left welts. I didn't want to take it off. I wouldn't. I needed all the help I could get.
Protection, I said.
Something like that.
He let it drop.
Now I keep it on so I don't forget what I lost.
It was weird hearing this. Like no longer having something could be a good thing. And the proof of it as well. I was used to the opposite, when absence equaled heartbreak. Suddenly, I had a million questions, and between the beer and the dark, I felt like I could ask them. But then Eric came around the corner, his guitar in hand.
Sorry to interrupt, he said.
I heard a slur in his voice.
But you're kind of being impolite, all sequestered over here.
How many beers have you had?